All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the meeting of the Boyce Covina Unified School District Board of Education. It's December 13th, 2011. And this evening's meeting was called to order at 6:07. And we'll start this evening's meeting with the swearing of the board members, Steve Cox, Cami Polis, and Mike Spence. So if you...
Would you like to do it individually or together?
Together.
Okay.
Together.
We stand. We're going to take a picture, so stand by the flag. Maybe this flag?
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, how do you want to stand?
Just
doesn't matter. Just
that
we're doing.
Like right here?
Yeah. And you see the flag?
We have to repeat after her, right?
And it's an honor to give you the oath of office, especially in front of your very proud family. Raise your right hand.
I, Cami Polis,
do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States. That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies. Foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance. To the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of California. That I take this obligation freely. Without any mental reservation. Or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully. Discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter. Congratulations.
Thank you. You want to introduce? I guess we probably all know.
And congratulations, family members who are here.
Yeah. Now we're going to close session, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for the families and people that are here to witness. And with that, I'll ask if we have any public comment regarding closed session items. Seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session at 6:08 or 6:10. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Welcome to the West Covina Unified School District Board of Education meeting December 13th, 2011. We called the meeting this evening open at 6:07, did a swearing in of the board members, new board members, Steve Cox, Cami Polis, and Mike Spence. We adjourned to closed session, and now we are in open session at 7:02. We'll begin this evening with an invocation. Is there anybody in the public who would like to take the opportunity to give an invocation? Seeing none, we'll be led by Cami Polis, please. Please rise.
Dear Lord, be with us this evening as we make the decisions that affect students' lives. We want to thank you for each and every teacher in this district, and we want to say a special thank you for all of the teachers that are being honored here tonight and how they've made a difference in their students' lives each and every year. In his name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Please join me in the salute to our flag. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Mrs. Miranda Jimenez?
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mrs. Polis?
Here.
Mr. Spence?
Here.
Ms. Manahan?
Here.
And Mrs. Kaplan?
Here.
Thank you. This evening in closed session, we took several actions, and I beg your patience while I read these out. Let's see. The following action was taken in closed session, December 13th, 2011, for full expulsions. It was moved by Cami Polis and seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez and approved to expel the following pupils from the schools in the district. Student number 19731, attempt to cause or threaten cause of physical injury to another person, and possession of a dangerous object. Student number 174664, Education Code 48900, caused or attempted or caused threatened physical injury to another person and disruption. And student number 192440 for unlawfully possessed, used, or sold otherwise furnished, or been under the influence of controlled substances or intoxicants of any kind and disruptions. The pupils are expelled and will not be eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in their rehabilitation plans. This evening in closed session, by a unanimous vote under closed session item B, personnel, public employee discipline, dismissal, release, and transfer, the board took action to approve a statement of charges for dismissal of a certificated employee. As a confidential personnel matter, the district may not disclose any further information regarding this action at this time. And then finally, in closed session, agenda item C, the Board of Education approved the settlement of a special education due process hearing, case number 20210109-0793. Settlement was approved to avoid protracted litigation without any admission of district liability. District did not provide money or any special education services, nor did it provide reimbursement for attorney's fees as part of this settlement. And the vote was 5-0. Thank you for your patience. Now we get to the good stuff. Tonight we have a presentation, something that we love to do every year, December. We have the presentations of the Teacher of the Year. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, this is my first board meeting to see so many people here, and it's wonderful. really welcome everybody. This is a very special presentation because we're here to honor our Teachers of the Year for West Covina School District. And we know that research tells us that the teacher is the most important, the most significant factor in a child's life in terms of their achievement in school. And interesting enough, the research also says the second most significant factor is the principal. So tonight we have our teachers and our principals here, and would like to honor all of you. When we talk about Teacher of the Year, I think there are certain criteria that we look for, where you stand out above others. And I think Cammie said you touch the lives of all of our students, and how do you do that? And you're here tonight because you're exemplary practitioners in both teaching and learning that is reflected by the high academic achievements of your students. You're the sphere of influence. It shows by you supporting your school and district initiatives, by being innovative, trying new things, not being afraid to take risks, and that you're dedicated to to your own professional development, which demonstrates the qualities of a lifelong learner. So we're very excited to have you here tonight, and I think what we'd like to do is call you up by school, come up with your principals. We want to take your picture so we can put it on our webpage and honor you that way as well. So let's start with California, Mariah Chang. Please come up. Cameron, we have Rosemary Walkie.
Rosemary wasn't able to come tonight. I'm sorry she had a previous commitment. I will be happy to deliver that. Thank you very much.
Do you want your picture taken?
No.
Okay, thank you. Merced Jessica Lunsford. Monta Vista, Lisa Matos.
Oops.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll get back to you.
Just do it randomly now.
Now we'll go back to
Merlinda. Lucy Lopez. I see a teddy bear back there.
Right here.
Orangewood, Tracy Morales. Sorry, I couldn't hear over the crowd. Vine, Brian Jones.
Wow. I must have ran out of people. Okay. The majority.
He's going to deserve it again.
West Cove, Amy Barrow. San Jose Edison Academy has both a elementary Penny Tackleberry and a junior academy Matt Bassett. Edgewood Middle School, Veronica Perez. Crest Middle School, Wendy Perez. Walnut Grove Intermediate, Melanie Jones. Coronado High School, Brandon Spalding.
It works.
Edgewood High School, Jeannie Barong. West Covina High School, Tim Woolston. And before I bring up our District Teacher of the Year, could I have all the parents and family members of our Teachers of the Year stand up? Because I'm looking out in the audience and I'm seeing such proud faces. You just stand out. So please stand up so we can say thank you to you as well. And as I see the parents here supporting your children, I have to again say another very significant factor for student success is our parents, and I don't want to leave our parents out. So thank you for being here supporting your children. And now I'd like to bring up our District Teacher of the Year, Brooks Atherton at Edgewood Middle. Brooks, please stay for a few minutes. I'd like to say a few words about you. I had the pleasure of going to the luncheon for the LA County Teacher of the Year celebration and had the opportunity of sitting with Brooks and getting to know him and to sit with his parents as well, who are wonderful. So I just want to give you a little background on Brooks. He began his career in West Covina. He told me all of this at lunch. In 2001, at Edgewood Middle School as an educational specialist for grades 6 through 8, the thing that I admire about him is he has an unwavering belief that all students can learn at high levels and continually provides the support his students need to excel. He's able to assess each of his students' needs and differentiate instructional strategies to individualize their instructional program, and is what we'd call a true advocate for students. He develops very strong relationships with them, and they know that he cares about them as individuals as well as students. He works collaboratively with the general education staff, and they see him as an important partner as well as a resource. He's dedicated to his own professional development. He was the lead facilitator in the Edgewood Communications Cadre Focus Group. He's a staff developer and has been instrumental in leading the professional development for Thinking Maps at Edgewood. He's also a head coach for the Academic Pentathon, as well as a chaperone and mentor for the 7th grade Catalina Island 3-day field trip. He has also acted as a support provider for the Beginning Teachers Assessment and Support Induction Program, BITSA, to ensure that new teachers to our district are successful in their classroom. What I did learn, he does a tremendous amount of volunteer work in many countries during his free time, and he is a true model for all of us and what it means to give back. And we appreciate you, and congratulations.
Congratulations to all of you. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for everything that you do for our kids, for our schools, and for our community. We'll take a five-minute break here so we have an opportunity for the other board members to meet and greet and talk amongst yourselves. And thank you very much again for being here. Thank you very much. We'll call the meeting back to order here. The next item on the agenda is the hearing session, board president's report. I just have an opportunity to report out that had a chance to attend the California School Board Association conference in San Diego. As always, I've been doing this for 17 years, and I think that's the 16th one that I've been at. And even though the exhibits were somewhat fewer in that, but with that, gave us more time to spend at with some of the other exhibitors. So it was a good conference, good speakers, good general session, and had an opportunity to bond and meet with a lot of people and learn some good things. So I had a good conference. Anybody else? Board of Education reports, Cammie?
I also went to the CSBA conference, and what was really nice about it is they kept it online, and I think it's going to be online until the 15th. So I really recommend people listening to the keynotes. They were awesome, and I know that my nephews and nieces and any other student I knew, I told them to go look at Khan Academy, and I was really excited about that, and if you haven't heard of it, I recommend you going to that. Also, the football game was phenomenal. I was a little disappointed in the commentator. I thought it was supposed to be unbiased, and he seemed a little bit biased, but that was okay because we just said another Wes Covina touchdown. So that was really exciting.
Eileen?
Thank you. Thank you for sharing about Khan Academy. For anybody who doesn't know where it's at, it's on YouTube. So you go into YouTube, and Khan is K-H-A-N, Khan Academy, and they have tutorials on everything that has to do with math, science, art history. So it's a great resource, not just for students, but as adults as well. I went ahead and I've been referring everybody to it. Cammie's right. Please get on the website. Excellent conference, as Steve said. Excellent conference. Look forward to implementing some of the ideas that we learned, and it was good to share time with all the board members. And that win was also equally as exciting. My favorite play of the game is when they took away our touchdown, and we just went and took it right back. So that was really good. So that was it. Thank you.
Jessica? Mr. Spence?
Or just, you know, I was at CSBA as well and at Khan Academy, but also, I mean, there were lots of other good stuff. But the exhibitors, clearly, over the last few years, you can tell the economy has affected the number of exhibitors that have been able to come. But, you know, and same with the football game. I mean, 84 points, you know. I mean, it was ugly. It was great. Felt kind of bad at some point, you know, that, you know, and you got to remember, that's 84 points against a championship team. I mean, this wasn't just, you know, a team. This is a championship team on sort of their home turf, and you know, clearly from the announcer, but you know, the announcer had his work cut out for him pretty quickly. So hats off to Mike Maggiore. Yes. And I know we're going to see him in a future meeting, but I mean, Mike's able to get players that, you know, at the beginning of the season when they go, they don't have, you know, the kind of whatever, you know, they don't have some of the stars that maybe other people have, but he's able to get people to, you know, give 110% and make them gel as a team. He's really good at that, getting their all from them. He's really good.
And student representative report, Megan.
Hello. Currently, our staff is going over what WASC brought to us, their recommendations. So all of the staff development is focused on the WASC focus plan. So they're working on that. And then we're still working with our content-specific vocabulary in every subject. There's, like I reported before, a weekly new vocabulary for each subject. And we're still working with thinking maps and our Cornell notes. On our extracurricular news, we're CIF champions, as was reported. And we also, they had the highest score record, so that was pretty exciting. Our band also got second at their championships, at the SCS BOA championships. And they went there a few years ago, but since then, it's been forever since they went there. So we're really proud of them. And our color guard were champions, and they got sweepstakes almost every time. So we're very proud of them. We're actually holding a championship rally on Thursday to celebrate all of them. And lastly, our choral union is having their end of the season concert this Friday. So I'd like to invite the board and anyone else who'd like to go. It's this Friday at 7 in our gym, and they're just wrapping up their season. So if you are interested, feel free to go. And that is everything. Oh, unfortunately, I don't have reports from the other schools this week. But.
And Megan is an extremely active and busy student, and she's asked to be excused for the rest of this evening. And so thank you for being here, and good luck in what you're... Okay, next item on the agenda is items from the floor. I have no specific requests to speak. Does anybody wish to speak to the board at this time? Seeing none, we'll move to the organizational part of the meeting, the approval of the agenda and consent items. Is there anybody that would like to add anything to consent? Remove anything from consent?
I think we need to remove 11 if the consulting contractors are going consent.
I'd like to ask to move 11 after 20.
Yeah, because 11 has approval for them to write grants.
So take it off consent and move it after 20.
Okay, move, take it off it and move. And okay, other than that procedural change, is there any other changes? Nothing. Is there a motion, please?
I'll move as an all second.
It's been moved by Lynn Miranda Jimenez, seconded by Cami Polis, to approve the agenda and consent items for regular organizational meeting, December 13th, 2011. Any objections? Hearing none, motion is so ordered. That then takes us to item number six, the California School Board Association Delegate Assembly nominations, to place nomination names candidates on the California School Board Association Delegate Assembly Region 23C.
I believe there are three seats available on our inner region. And
Go ahead. I don't see a place in here for. Do I have that someplace else in here? Or?
What?
Huh? No, I did a place for a chance for nominations, or is there? All right. I'll do it this way. Are there any nominations for candidates for School Board Association Delegate Assembly?
Can I put forward some names?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'd like to put forward Cami Pulos. I'd like to put forward Mike Spence and Shilonine Cruz Gonzalez.
And where is she from?
District. Oh, I'm sorry, Shilonine. Do you need me to spell that? X-I-L-O-N-I-N,
yep.
And then it's Cruz Gonzalez, hyphenated.
Anybody else?
Okay.
Well, Joseph's doing a great job.
Joseph from?
From Charter Oak.
Okay.
But we only can do three names. And Rosemary's not going to be running according to Eileen. Rosemary had, I thought she was she wasn't going to run for election for school board again, but Eileen has just informed me that she wasn't going to run for CSBA.
Right.
But she had
indicated
that she was a delegate. But
at least that's the last she said to me, but yeah. Unless it changed, but yeah.
All right, so we have nominations, those three nominations. Is there a motion?
I'll go ahead and move it.
Is there a second? I'll second it. Been moved by Lynn Miranda Jimenez, seconded by Steve Cox, to place nominations named for candidates. School Board Assembly, Cami Polis, Mike Spence, and...
Shilonine
Cruz Gonzalez. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Okay. An information report regarding strategic planning.
Turn the lights off.
I guess I'd like to start. During my career, I've been involved in strategic planning, both as a participant on a strategic planning team and as a facilitator for a district. And during my interview, there were a lot of questions about strategic planning and strategic planning for our district, so I felt like tonight would be a good opportunity to share with you my thoughts about building a strategic plan for our district. The goal for a strategic plan for our district would be to bring all of the West Covina stakeholders together to work collaboratively to define who we are, what we want to do, and what we stand for, to guide us in building our future goals and action plans. The question might be, what is strategic planning and why? Strategic planning is a process to define a strategy and direction for the district. It's a way of looking at a big picture and really having conversations about what we are doing, where we are going, and how we're going to get there. It's a very fluid process, and it provides us with the opportunity to build a plan within parameters in which we would work. It's a very careful and thorough planning tool, and you don't just do it for any reason. I think there are two really specific times in a district or in an organization when you might be thinking of strategic planning. The first is when you've reached the end of your major planning phase and have reached your goals. And as you know, the goals that we have, the achievement goals that we have, were ending in 2010, and achievement goals are really ongoing and would be something we would always be looking for. Another major time when you might be looking to do a strategic plan is when there's a new initiative to your district. So why now? As I already said, the 2010-11 achievement goals are in process, and we've made tremendous progress on those goals. But when you reach achievement goals, your goal is really to get to the next achievement level. So that's ongoing. Right now, our district and our state is faced with the implementation of the Common Core State Standards. And with those standards brings some really new concepts that we have not, as a district, focused on. First is the 21st century skills. Second is a major emphasis on writing, authentic writing, writing across the curriculum, and the reading of informational texts. And the major, a major change in the core curriculum standards is the focus on technology and really using students using technology to demonstrate what they know. So there's a way that we need to look at giving our students the opportunity to use technology to demonstrate their understanding. In 2014, we're going to be implementing the Smarter Balance assessment system, and that is a new assessment system that is going to be students are going to need to demonstrate what they know through performance-based kinds of questions. So when we look at what we are now assessing students on for achievement, that is going to change. And we really have to understand what they're going to be assessed on and how we as a district can start implementing practices that will prepare them for those assessments in 2014. When you start this process, the first thing you really want to examine is the trends, the future trends that might impact education, and to identify our core values and to develop or revise our mission statement based on those core values. I think one thing you want to start, there's some questions that you ask when you start the process, and I'm not going to ask you to give the answers right now. I'm just going to ask you to think about this. What are the characteristics and abilities that West Covina graduates of 2018, what should they possess to be successful in this world? And as we look at the graduates of 2012, are they the same? If they are, why? And if they are, why not? And I think that's something that we as a community need to answer. But another important question is to look at our kindergartners who are coming to us, who are going to be the graduates in 2025. What abilities and characteristics are they coming to us with that are very different than kindergartners came with us before? And I know as I look at my granddaughter and her knowledge about technology, it's very, very different in terms of what they're able to demonstrate at a much younger age. So we have to also look at a strategic plan as how these kids are coming to us at younger ages and what they need, where we can promote their learning as well. I recently read the book, The Global Achievement Gap, by Tony Wagner. He's a co-director of the Change Leadership Group at Harvard Graduate School of Education, where he's been writing and facilitating work with educators who are grappling with the challenges facing our schools within the larger context of the demands of the global economy. And he's identified what he calls basic skills, seven skills that he feels all students must learn and embrace with our classrooms in order to experience success in the rapidly changing world. I'd like to talk a little bit about these skills. And one of the things that I find very interesting is he says these skills are also skills that are necessary for active and informed citizenship. One of the things that he outlines is critical thinking and problem solving, and I think we've heard that before. But he defines it a little bit differently in terms of the ability to ask good questions, that we approach problems and challenges as learners as opposed to knowers, so that when we go into it, we don't know all the answers, but we need the tools in which we can find the answers. And understanding that yesterday's solutions don't solve tomorrow's problems. So it's a different approach to critical thinking than I've thought about before. He also looked at the research for a partnership of 21st century skills, where 400 employers were interviewed. And when they talked about critical thinking, 4 out of 5 employers said that this is one of the most important skills that our high school graduates have. But 70% of these employers ranked high school graduates as deficient in this area. So are we teaching our graduates to be problem solvers and critical thinkers? He talks about collaboration across networks and leading by influence, which I thought was really interesting. When he talks about collaboration across networks, he's really talking about this global world where kids are not going to be collaborating in the same room, but they're going to be collaborating in rooms, separate rooms, but with other people from different countries. And that the Partnership for 21st Century Skills says it's extremely important that our students understand diverse religions, cultures, and lifestyles, because they're going to be communicating and working with people that have very different lifestyles than our students are used to. And that when we look at collaboration and leading by influence, we're really looking at empowering people to achieve results, not to just do tasks. The part that I felt was interesting was the ability to influence rather than direct and command. And when he talks about leaders in the past, he says usually the leader comes in with a plan and tells everybody what to do and how to do it. But it's really now that we're trying to have leaders that really know how to influence people, know how to support people, and bring where the really thinking comes from everybody coming together. It's not the commander-in-chief who has all the answers to all the problems. Agility and adaptability is the whole idea of being able to think, change, and be adaptive. And what he's saying is you might be hired with a set of tools that's needed for a job, but 5 or 6 years from now, those skills aren't necessary. So you have to constantly be able to adapt to the new skills that are expected, and that you have to deal with new and rapidly changing business environments. With initiative, again, it's about seeking out new opportunities and ideas, strategies for improvement, but he's really looking at the scale of being self-directed and achievement-oriented and a drive for results. There's always a focus on what we're going to be able to do. Effective written and oral skills was interesting to me because he's also talking about the virtual office and communicating in a different way, whether it be through email or whether it be through Skype, but there are different ways of communicating. And when the Partnership of 21st Century Skills talked to the 400 employers, 57% said communication, writing memos, letters, complex reports were extremely important, but 80% reported that our high school graduates are deficient in this area. And so I think we're really pleased that writing is going to be an emphasis on the core curriculum standards, because it is evident that it's something that we need to work on. Assessing and analyzing information is really about the quality and quantity of information. There's so much information out there. How do we look at that information, analyze it, synthesize it, and come up with new challenges with that information? And then finally, curiosity and imagination is really about thinking outside the box, coming up with creative solutions. I have a quote I wanted to read by Albert Einstein that I think says it all. Imagination is more important than knowledge, for knowledge is limited, whereas imagination embraces the entire world, stimulating progress, giving birth to evolution. We have to teach our kids that skill. And when I look at these skills, they're really how they apply knowledge. It's not the knowledge we know is going to be there. We're still going to be teaching them content, but I think there's more of a focus on what they do with that knowledge in terms of demonstrating what they know and then moving to the next step in terms of using that knowledge to solve these complex problems that are facing our world today. The process really begins with a shared vision based on community values, and it really is very inclusive. It's a process. It's not just a process the board goes through or the principals go through or district leadership goes through. You really want to get community members involved. You want teachers involved. You want classified people involved. That it's an opportunity for us to reflect on our own personal values, listen to others, but then really talk about bringing these personal and community values together to clearly articulate what our values are in terms of educating students. I think all of us know that our values are really representative of everything that we do and think, and that it's the highest priority, and you can pretty much understand what someone's values are by their actions, decision-making, and their interpersonal interactions. And it's a very important step in this process because the values really do determine why we do the things we do and why they're important to us. And once you've clearly identified the values of your organization, you use those values to both hire and promote individuals within the organization, and those values are what you celebrate and reward in terms of the individuals within your organization. Tonight we rewarded our Teacher of the Year. What are our values for teachers? So when we reward these teachers, the values we have are very clear, and they exemplify what we're talking about. I wanted to give you simple sample value statements. Not that I think these should be adopted, because they really have to come from a community, but as I read them, I want you to think about, if these were our values, how would they affect the decisions we make as a district? If we believe, because values are really our beliefs, students are respected as individuals with different potentials, interests, and needs. Our students can only be considered fully educated if they possess the academic, social, and technological skills required for an increasing, complex, and diverse world. Our students' individual needs should be considered primary important in every decision at every level in our district. Our students are capable of taking on leadership and reaching their full potential. All students can learn. Once you identify those values, everything you do is focused on making sure that you're standing by those values. Some sample values for faculty might be that our faculty combines an expertise in content area with a true love of learning to actively engage and challenge all students. Our faculty respects, identifies, and meets the individual needs of all students and families. Our faculty is integral part of the decision-making process, supported in their ongoing professional development, and deserving of the community's respect and admiration. Our faculty dedicate themselves to the idea that students can and should learn. Again, this would be what the values of our organization would be. The mission statement really defines who we are, what we do best, and what we stand for. And a worthy mission statement really provides us with the motivation and the inspiration that leads everybody in the district to commitment and involvement. It really is keeping us focused as we go along. I know that West Covina has a mission statement, and I know that it was developed many years ago. The mission statement for West Covina is, West Covina Unified School District works in concert with our families, the community, and businesses to provide all students with a high-quality education in a safe and secure environment in order to graduate well-educated, responsible citizens. The question would be, as we look at these 21st century skills, is this still relevant? And one of the things we're doing at our principals meeting on Thursday is we have different vision statements and mission statements throughout our school district at different schools. And what we're doing is bringing all of the mission statements together and looking at what we have in common and what's not in common, because we are a K-12 district. And is it still relevant? Is this an opportunity for us to really put together our values and beliefs and then revisit the mission statement and make changes based on that? This slide is really basically kind of putting it all together, that the vision statement describes the future, where you are going and where you want to go. A vision statement I had in one district was that all students would be passionate about learning, that that's what we saw the future state to be. Our fundamental beliefs guide our actions as we move towards our vision. The mission describes why do you exist today, and what are you going to pursue to get to the vision of the future? And the mission leads to action steps, which is actually the strategic plan, where we talk about what we are going to do, we invest our resources, and put into action specific steps that are going to get us to meet our goals. as I look at where we are in our district and where, how do we start this, and I look at the Common Core standards, that is something that's non-negotiable that we need to be implementing. We kind of need to look at implementation of the Common Core standards over here and the development of the mission statement over here, taking into consideration what are the components of the Common Core standards. I do think this is an appropriate and an important time for us to start this process. The way I would see us starting would be in January through March, that we would be identifying the key stakeholders who would participate in the process. It would be a time for us to work together to identify our vision, our guiding values, and our beliefs that support the vision, and to revisit our mission statement and revise it or keep it as is, but to at the end of March that we would have our vision, our values, and our mission statement. April and June, I need to tell you, I'm not so sure about these timelines because we're building a budget during this time, and we're going to have a budget committee that we'll talk about later. We're implementing the core standards. This is just kind of my thinking, but I would need some feedback. I see April and June as an opportunity to assess our community through focus groups or through surveys to see, because again, we want to know our community values and what our community really feels we should be focused on. Based on all this information, the board would really look at this along with our cabinet to identify what are the critical issues and priorities. Those would become our goals, and we would write goal statements together to, and they would be SMART goals, which I've talked about before, in terms of what we want to accomplish in the 3 to 5 years ahead of us. The next step, and I don't have a timeline on this because I really don't know if it's something we would do in the summer or do next year, once you have your specific goals, you develop committees for each goal, and each committee develops objectives, strategies, and action plans for each goal. And at the end of that process, you would have your strategic plan. After that, it would be really going about and selling it to the community at large, going around and sharing what that is. So it's a long process. I don't really think we could be done at the end of the summer. I think we have to look at this. If we really want to do it well and we want to do it right, I think we have to take the time to do that. The question that I would have is, would you want me to facilitate that process? I can and have facilitated it with the district. There's pros and cons where when you want the superintendent to be actively working with individual groups and on committees, then you would have an outside person facilitate it. But I feel like it's something that I could do, and it is expensive to do that. It is something I would want some input from the board in terms of what you think, but it is something I feel like I could do. I guess I want to end with a quote. Turning to one another, simple conversations to restore hope for the future. Margaret Wheatley is an author, and she wrote, as we work together to restore hope for the future, we must include a new and strange ally, our willingness to be disturbed, our willingness to have our beliefs and ideas challenged by what others think. No one person or perspective can give us the answers we need to the problems of today. Paradoxically, we can only find those answers by admitting we don't know. We have to let go of our certainty and expect ourselves to be confused for a time. And I think that's something that's very difficult for us to do in education, but I think it's really essential to develop the kind of plan that we want for our district. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This is an excellent presentation, and I'm excited about beginning the process, especially with your expertise in this area. So thank you very much. I can see great things that lie ahead.
Thank you.
Spence?
When do you want us to figure out if you're going to do it or someone else is going to do it?
Calendar tonight, one thing I'd like to put on a calendar is a planning meeting with me and the board that we've not had an opportunity since I've come to the district to get together and have the kind of conversations that a superintendent board have in terms of what your goals are for me, where we want to go, and I think at that meeting we would answer a lot of these questions. I would hope we could do that in early January.
Sorry.
It would be a special meeting.
Okay. Because I think the first part about identifying stakeholders and stuff, I think that's obviously something that can be done, you know, without hiring anybody. But I want to talk. I'm just trying to get an idea of when you think we need to do that. So.
Well, I was going to recommend that we meet in January, as I said, if we want to even bring in a facilitator, but we meet to really look at board and superintendent and goals for myself for this year, and this would be part of the goals that we would be discussing and come up with those kinds of answers.
Okay.
I would need direction from the board.
And I know we're not making that this decision tonight,
But I would really like to know, because we're talking about cuts next year and cuts the next year, and that's not even looking at the cuts from the state, but we're anticipating doing that, to really have some hard numbers on what this would cost and then to put it in perspective on what we are already going to be cutting, because we definitely don't want to have this affect the students in any way. What we want to do is make a, be able to put more resources towards them.
And I agree with you, and that's why I feel like it's something that I could lead the district in that would not cost money. But I think when you think of a strategic plan, it's really important to do it when we have limited resources, because what it's going to identify is what do we want to spend on. It's going to prioritize our spending. So when we're looking at budget and we're looking at where we're going, we look at the strategic plan and we look at that roadmap and say, what are the most important pieces of our program that support that?
But it doesn't look like it's going to be done until after this first round of cuts.
Yes. Well,
and even if we wait until the following year, we're not sure when the planning process is going to be through, and will we have the information will we have our goals in place in time before the second round of cuts that we know we're going to have to do?
I would hope that we would have the goals by the beginning of the next school year. We might not have this action plans that are going to meet the goals, but I would hope at the beginning of next school year we would have very specific goals that we're focused on. So in answer to this year's budget, no, we wouldn't have that information, but it certainly would help us guide us for the future.
January. I don't know what day you're looking at or when you would plan that.
I would need you folks to look at your
calendar. We just approved a bunch of meeting dates, and so, but not this one.
No, this was one I wanted to ask tonight.
So are we supposed to give Monica dates who are available, or are you looking at
that?
Where are you looking at?
We could pick a Saturday if you wanted to do a Saturday, or we could pick an evening. If you want, what I could do is send some dates out to you and have you guys respond to some dates that I send out.
Let's do that.
When you're talking about a Saturday, you're talking about all day? And because an evening, there's a big difference in being able to sit 6 hours in an evening and sitting 6 hours on a Saturday. So it really depends on how many hours we're going to be sitting in.
If we bring in a consultant, which I think for this particular, it might help us. I think we would need four hours. And probably a Saturday would be the best bet, because you kind of want to do that when you're really.
Chris?
Yeah. So if people are open to a Saturday, I could send you Saturday dates. Would that be okay with everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda, we're going to move item 11. So we're talking on item number 12, the information report for mental health services plan.
I'm Kimberly Alexander, the Special Education Director, and it's my first opportunity to present to you, so I'm happy to be here. As you may or may not know, mental health has previously been provided to special education students through the Department of Mental Health, and due to some canceled legislation, it is no longer going to be, and it falls to the district starting in January. I don't believe so. Sure, it's the same one.
All right, we'll just take a second. Or do you want to keep going while we do this? Or?
That's fine with me, if that's okay
with
you.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I would just give you sort of a brief history of where we are and how we got to this point. AB 3632 is the legislation that has been providing mental health to special education students and was administered by the Department of Mental Health. It's also known as AB 2726 or Chapter 26.5. In 1976, Congress guaranteed that students with disability would have the right to a free and appropriate education, including mental health services. Now, prior to that, districts had been providing those services. So from 1976 to 1984, the services were provided by the schools. Then in 1984, the state legislature assigned county mental health departments the responsibility for providing student services, except for students in programs that were located out of state, so residential students who weren't being served directly by the district. And then in 1996, the state legislature expanded the county responsibilities to include out-of-state students, so then they did start working with those out-of-state students. In 2010, Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed AB 3632, and then in June of this year, Governor Brown signed AB 114, which created a transition program between AB 3632 and school districts taking over the program. And one of the biggest differences is that AB 3632 provided many more services than are required by Ed Code. So we have a plan that has been in place providing services that school districts who are now administering mental health are not required to provide. So it's going to be a learning time between school districts, community advocates, and parents, learning what school districts are actually required to provide versus what mental health has been providing. AB 3632 provided services, thank you, Monica, to students and families in addition to those described as educationally necessary in Ed Code. And that's what we're going to be focusing on, educationally necessary mental health services. So this is our plan. And basically, the school psychologists and the special ed administration, we have a program specialist as well, sat down and took several months to look at what it is we want to provide to our students and how would we do that. So the process that we undertook was to develop a continuum of services for all students in the district. One of my goals is that this will not be a special education program, but it will be a district-wide mental health continuum of services, so we can provide support not only to special ed students but to general education students who are having difficulties as well. So we worked to develop a comprehensive plan utilizing all of our current and possibly some additional service providers. So the participants in this process were the school psychologists, myself and the program specialists for special education. Our local SELPA had input as they have directed some of the funds and how that would be operated. And then outside agencies that we currently work with, such as Foothill Family and some that we are looking at working with in the future. We are looking at a pyramid of intervention. And the four committees that we had developed the pyramid of intervention. What does assessment look like now that we're doing it rather than Department of Mental Health? What kind of parental training might we provide as a district, and how are we going to fund our plan? So the first part is the pyramid of intervention. It's three levels. We have mild, moderate, and severe. And I'm going to talk fairly fast through this so that I don't cause anyone to fall asleep, but if you have questions, let me know. So tier one for general education students would be a mild tier. It would be students who do not have special education services. They have not been referred for counseling previously and or have not been through the SST process completely. The plan would be a 12-week timeline. There would be SST meetings, both initial and interim. And possible interventions for the students would be classroom and teacher interventions, individual or group counseling, referral to outside agencies for counseling depending on family insurance, parental training, and consultation with school psychologists. Service providers for the general education population would be classroom teachers, counselors at both the middle school and high school levels, partner agencies such as Foothill Family or Bienvenidos, a district social worker, and counseling interns. For a special education student at Tier 1, we would be looking at a student who has an IEP, may or may not have a behavior teaching plan, and or school-based counseling with the school psychologist or partner agencies. Our interventions at this level, both general education and special education, are the same. It would be a 12-week timeline. We would document those interventions in the IEP or BTP, and then it would be the same possible interventions, so I won't read through those again. Service providers would be the classroom teacher, possible service providers, school psychologists, counselors, partner agencies, district social worker, and counseling interns. training that would need to take place at this level would for our participants would be the classroom teachers would need training, special education teachers, our interns that we may bring in, and school administrators. And then training would take place in the areas of progress monitoring and identification of needs. And for this level, just an example of the kind of student we're talking about, this might be a student who is having issues making friends. We might work with them in a social group, that kind of thing. So a very mild level of student, but a student who nonetheless needs some intervention and some support. Tier 2 would be our moderate tier. For general education, it would be students who do not have special education services, students who have been through the SST process without success, students who have participated in some form of the 12-week intervention at Tier 1 level. The process would be a 12-week minimum timeline again. There would be a more formalized school site plan for this student. Possible interventions would be individual and group counseling, consultation between the classroom teacher and our psychologist or MFT interns, educationally based progress monitoring, and classroom accommodations. Service providers at this level, school psychologists would do some consultation, school counselors would do consultation, and then our school psychologists, MFT, or social worker interns would also participate along with our partner agencies. At the special education level for this moderate Tier 2 intervention would be students who currently receive special education students with a formalized BTP, behavior training plan, school-based counseling services with a school psychologist or partner, and have participated in some form of that level 1 12-week intervention. It looks a little bit different for special education at this level. These students, it would be 12-week timeline again, but they probably already have some of these things in place in their IEP, possible individual or group counseling, DIS counseling, educationally based progress monitoring, and then accommodations and modifications to the classroom. Providers for special education students would be school psychologists, our interns again, and our partner agencies. We could also, at this point, do a revisit to a previous grant that the district had, the PIP grant. That might be something that would fit well into this pyramid of intervention. And then school site training, again, we would want to do some additional training for our school psychologists, our counselors, and our teachers when appropriate. And an example of a student in this particular tier might be a student who's very disruptive in the classroom. Teacher has worked with them, put in accommodations. They've had support, but they're just not making progress, and it is interfering with their access to the core curriculum. So that would be the kind of student that fits into that moderate level. And then Tier 3, we're almost done, is the severe level. And these would be special education students. By the time we reach this level, a student should have already been assessed for special education services. Would be a student who has an IEP with appropriate supports already in place. They participated in Tier 2 12-week intervention, and they continue to have these very significant behaviors that are interfering with their education. It would be documented in their IEP. Possible interventions would be further assessment for educationally related mental health services, individual counseling, referral to appropriate community agencies, networking with community resources, and parent and family interventions. Possible providers would be a marriage and family therapist, a licensed social worker, our school psychologists, interns, and partner agencies. We looked at what kinds of training we would want to provide to our parents in the district. And we were looking at 4 to 6 offerings per year with a biannual schedule for training. So it would take 2 years, basically, to go through all the different kinds of trainings we might provide to our parents so that we wouldn't be providing the same training every year. We'd be rotating those, and it would be a fresh list of trainings each year. And our presenters would be our current school staff. Topics we've looked at, ADHD, behavior modification, autism, eating disorders, self-injurious behaviors, as we see a lot in the high schools, and drug and alcohol counseling. And then just additional assessment materials that we might use as as a team when we're doing that additional mental health assessment. Funding, the most important part. I am recommending that we look at several new positions for the district. Mental health psychologist, which would be an MFCC or an MFT. A licensed social worker who can work with our families and our school sites to get connections into community-based organizations so that we're not using just school resources to fund our mental health program. Additional nurse time, up to 10 interns, and then a physician consultant. And all of these positions generate additional revenue through LEA billing and MA billing. Sources of funding for mental health overall, we do get an allocation from the state, which comes to us through the SELPA. We will have increased LEA funds due to our ability to bill for those additional services that we'll be providing. And then I would like to apply for a community development block grant that is offered through the City of West Covina to bring in some additional sources of revenue to this particular program. And that's it. Did I talk fast enough?
Mm-hmm. Did you curiosity have any on the various tier levels.
Yes.
Are they typically grade oriented? No.
Just no.
All tiers, all grades.
Yes, it's the intervention, the level of intervention that guides the tiers.
Cammie.
After the 12 weeks, if a student has an IEP, are they going to have another IEP to see how they're doing? Because you said that you were going to reassess each 12 weeks. To see if they've met their goals and then possibly change the goals.
That's always a possibility. It really depends on how formally it was written into the IEP. So if the IEP says that we will meet in 12 weeks to review, absolutely we'll be doing that. And my assumption would be if a student continues to have troubles, we're going to need to have that IEP meeting.
Yeah, because I don't understand how you wouldn't have an IEP if it didn't work in 12 weeks, because then it looks like you'd have to be writing new goals. Or changing how you were trying to meet those goals.
If the mental health goals were formally written into the IEP, yes, that would be correct. If it's, for example, the student is participating in a social group, but it doesn't necessarily get written into the IEP, we wouldn't necessarily have to revise an IEP. But if we were going to go into DIS counseling, for example, then that has to be written in the IEP.
The other question is, you're taking a student, a general education student, mm-hmm. through the process.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like they can go all the way. Who determines when the student's going to be assessed for mental health for it, to see if they actually have special needs and qualify for an IEP?
The team that's working with them. So every student is going to have a team that's working with them, which would consist of their teacher, possibly their school administrator, either an intern or a psychologist. That team is going to look at the student. Now, the SST team is going to drive it initially at that Tier 1 level.
And then the parents involved in
oh,
the
absolutely.
SST. So what
always.
About this at Tier 2? How are
at
the parents
Tier 2
involved?
For general ed, we're going to look at a school site plan, which would involve the parent signing off and giving permission for that plan. So, yes.
And then you were talking about rotating the parent trainings.
Yes.
Some of the parent trainings, for example, autism and Asperger's, really aren't going to have anything to do with a person, or possibly, I mean, you can have two diagnoses, but with an eating disorder. So are you going to be running two different programs because you're going to rotate through them?
Right.
So there might not be a program for a parent for because you're not going to go to eating disorders if your child has ADHD.
We wouldn't require any parent to go to all of them.
No, I know you're not, but you may not, if you're not running a program that's going to benefit that parent at the time,
mm-hmm.
are you going to make referrals to them so they can be getting support in the meantime and learning strategies?
Sure, that's what I'm hoping that our licensed social worker would do for us, connect us to community resources. The parent information trainings are meant to be sort of a broader-based information session for parents. I wouldn't expect that these parents had a lot of knowledge on those subjects. They were just interested. So it's sort of a foundational level of information. Our licensed social worker, our psychologists, our interns hopefully are going to be connecting those parents with resources in the community all throughout the process.
And then for generating funds, I know that all students can generate SELPA funds, but for the MA funds, I don't know if I said that right, that's only for people who qualify for Medi-Cal or for Healthy Families, correct?
MA funds is actually based on school district employees and the time that they spend, so it doesn't go back to
it's
any one student.
It's not income eligible?
Right.
So can you explain that to me a little bit? Sorry.
No, that's okay. MA is a time survey, so I think it's done 4 times a year, and if you do the first 3 successfully, you don't have to do the 4th one. They just average it. It takes a picture in time of your week. So, for example, I do it, and I look at my week, and I say, okay, how many times am I in IEP meetings? How much time is that? How much time am I working with other district staff to plan programs? That has its own section. And so based on that time sheet, there's a number that MA attaches to it, and that's how the district is reimbursed.
What's the acronym stand for?
Oh. There you go.
So it's not income eligible, though.
It has nothing to do with student eligibility.
It's based on staff time.
It's based on what you're doing with that particular student.
And now, is there a way to get funds from Medi-Cal or Healthy Families?
That's done through the LEA billing. And yes, those providers are going to be able to bill on a regular basis and provide additional funding that way. Absolutely. That's in the 3 levels of funding, LEA was part of that. Okay. They're going to be generating more sources of revenue.
And just tell me the acronym again.
Medi-Cal Administrative
Activity. So this is a California state funded program.
Yes.
It's federal.
Medi-Cal, though, you said.
Yeah, but it's administered by the state.
Yep.
It's federal funds.
Mm-hmm. The federal funds.
Mm. And we currently do that already, our nurses bill and our psychologists bill. But as we bring in these additional staff members, they, too, will be able to bill for their time.
And these are all – are you finished, Kim?
Yes.
Okay. The number of students – I mean, you're talking a lot of personnel coming in, which is fabulous. I mean, I'm not – question. I think but it sure does sound sort of odd that this is available to us now and that we can move forward in this capacity. Is this going to be a long-standing funding, or is this one of these things that's going to be, you know, we hire these people, you know, they're here until...
No, it's a long-standing funding. Basically, the state has said, okay, Department of Mental Health has been doing this for years and years. We think we can get it done at a lower cost if we let the schools do it. So they've now taken that source of funding and moved it over to the schools. And so we have to create a program to provide those services.
Great.
I have one other quick
Go
question.
Ahead.
The community development block grant. Mm-hmm. Do you know, has anyone already applied for the mental health portion of that grant?
In other cities, yes.
No, but I mean here, because
here
I know that there were other agencies that applied through it for West Covina, and they didn't get it. So, but I don't know if nobody's gotten it from the city of West Covina.
That part I don't know. I will tell you that we fall high in the criteria level as far as how they're supposed to fund, being that we're a school district and we're serving students who need mental health intervention. So that's high on the priority level for a CDBG grant. But also the program will move on with or without the CDBG grant. It just would be an additional source of revenue that I would like to seek.
And because we're a school district, we'd be higher on the priority list, is what I'm hearing?
Yes, because of this special ed is a criteria in there that's high. Students are a criteria, and mental health is a criteria. We've got all 3.
Okay. All right. Mr. Spence?
Yeah, I had several questions, I guess.
Sure.
And that is, you know, I'm talking about the parent training, you know, there's other aspects of mental health, you know, depression, you know, things like that, where I could see parents that would want to find out more about that aren't necessarily covered in here.
These were just additional ideas that we had as a team. It definitely is not inclusive of everything. It was just those things that we came up with originally.
And on that parental component, when you said that there'd be a school site plan that parents would sign off on?
Yes.
Yeah, but would parents be signing off on their individual kid being part of this process? Obviously, those that are in special education have gone through IEPs, they have done
that. Right.
But those in the general education population, who do have a lot of mental health needs as well. You know, they don't have a process like that where they sit down formally with parents and get sign off on services.
That's what this would be.
They'd be doing it individually.
Yes, we actually already use it in the district, so it's not new. We use it for other things, but it would be appropriate to sit down, design our plan, and have the parent agree to it.
Okay. Okay, that'd be important. And then, you know, one of the reasons the governor vetoed AB 3632 and then the whole 114 is what you talked about is to shift services and try to save money.
Right.
You know, but part of that is some services aren't going to be offered, I guess.
Right.
And so, so when we talk about that funding component, and you say that, you know, if there's extra revenue associated with, you know, the MA funding, et cetera, mm-hmm. But that revenue doesn't cover all those expenses of those positions.
No, but the revenue that we get from the SELPA or from the state via the SELPA, along with our additional LEA revenue, would cover them. Now, the amount that we take out of LEA is what would be in question. If we get the CDBG grant, it's less we have to pull out of the LEA fund, and that money can go towards other things. If we don't get it, then we would have to pull additional monies out of the LEA. And LEA is generated by our service providers.
Right. And then, you know, then what would that money be being pulled from, I guess, would be the other part of it.
Well, to be honest, it's money that we don't currently have. It's money that the programs that are going to be brought back by special education mm-hmm. will be generating. It's going to be a significant amount of money that we don't currently have in our district.
Okay.
It's new money.
And you think that's going to be unlimited?
No, absolutely not. Okay. But I'm not asking for an unlimited budget. We have a very strict budget, and we intend to stay within it.
And what is that budget amount?
I did not bring that with me.
What's the ballpark?
The ballpark is about $500,000 for the year, give or take.
And that funds these positions, including the physician consultant?
Yes. The physician consultant, for example, bringing a physician consultant on, it allows us to do some higher level
right.
things that we may need
yeah.
to do, like medication monitoring. But it also allows us to bill for some additional services that we can't currently bill for because there's no physician supervision.
So that's not an employee of the district then?
No, it would be a consultant or a contracted service.
And then the community development block grant, I mean, that's I mean, you could say we're going to be higher in the process, but, you know, there's lots of people that compete for those
sure.
things. I do want to point out to you that you should talk to Supervisor Molina's office
okay.
because we do serve a portion of the county of Los Angeles, okay. and they do have community block grants available as well.
Absolutely.
And that may be, I don't know how many students we serve that would be eligible, but that's also something that, you know, as another aspect of, and they do have an application process, you know, just like the city does.
Sure,
as well,
I'd be happy to
does.
Do that.
Because I think some of our students obviously would qualify.
And I'm going to be continually looking for additional sources of revenue for special ed, so be happy to do that.
Well, the community development archive is not necessarily for special ed, it's for the entire program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in this case,
mental
yes.
health program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I kind of view this as overarching, not just the special ed component. At
right.
least how you presented it.
That's exactly what I wanted for the district. I wanted it to help all of our students and not just a portion of our students. And I think ultimately it's going to keep some students out of special ed, which is a good thing.
Right,
because
and that's
we'll
why
intervene earlier.
I was glad you mentioned PIP because I know I've been disappointed that we haven't funded PIP and haven't gone through that process and we eliminated that. And I think that's that kind of early intervention at those kinds of ages for some of those things actually may prevent people from being
absolutely.
In special
totally
ed, but also same time, there's a lot of, again, kids that aren't special ed that need have a lot of this. A lot of adults do, for that matter. Self-included. So. Mm-hmm. Okay.
My question was about the teachers and the counselors,
mm-hmm.
since all my other questions were getting answered. And that is it going to now, are we going to have more support for the counselors and teachers, or does this mean they're going to now take on more?
No, we're going to have more support because we're going to be looking at bringing in interns. We're going to have the additional staff in the district. And we're going to be able to provide more intense training to teachers. So they have these students in their classroom already. We want to give them the tools to work with those students.
Mm.
Okay.
So it is our intention to support the teachers in a stronger fashion than we've been able to in the past.
Okay, thank you, because that was my concern, being that we're going to have to do this here centrally now
mm-hmm.
or locally in our district. and we already have teachers and counselors that are stretched incredibly thin.
I think they're doing a lot of this already on their own. This is going to bring an organization to that.
They can now hand it over.
More training.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They'll partner with this plan to do it. Okay. Some of the things which they're already doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent. And some of the things that come across our table here tend to be at the high school and middle school level.
Right, mm-hmm.
Patterns that have mm-hmm. started back in elementary. So we're going to be doing a lot of identification in elementary.
That's why I wanted this to be a continuum for the whole district. I didn't want it to just be something that serves special ed, even though that's really what we could do. I wanted it to be something that would benefit the entire district.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, in PIP's in elementary school.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, there's become more and more of a, I mean, we've always had a transient type of flow in certain areas of the district, but now we're talking about, you know, a greater, you know, I don't know to what extent it is, but, you know, we're hearing more and more about whether it's homelessness or multifamily living conditions and that sort of stuff.
Right.
So I think this problem becomes more and more, or more acute in those circumstances.
Absolutely.
So,
during times of recession, those statistics go higher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. I'm excited about this. It's all right. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
To say something, Kim obviously is in our district, and in the short time that she's been here, she has been phenomenal about analyzing programs and services we have, and coming up with suggestions to bring programs back and better serve our students. And so when she presented this to us in cabinet, I was really impressed with the process that she went through that brought in, again, different members of her the program. And I think it's really ambitious, but I think
next item on the agenda is item number 20, is the contract with the consultant, California Consulting LLC, for a one-year contract from December 14th to 2011 to December 13th, 2012.
Hey, if we can get money from Albany, I'll vote for that first. That's even better.
They
get money from Albany.
A great reputation. They're the largest grant writing firm in the state. I'm really trying hard not to do that. Do it every once in a while. They've written 301 federal, state, and private foundation applications since 2004 and have been funded for their clients. They have never had a client where they did not generate significantly more money for the client than the client paid them. And they've had a high return. It's a high return for our investment. They've generated almost $1.4 billion for their clients since 2004. They're opening an office in Montebello in January with a full-time grant writer that will service our area. Several school districts have also signed up with them. And one of the things that we liked about them, not only do they write the grants, but when the grants are accepted, they take the responsibility for compliance, for reporting, evaluations, a lot of time that staff has to do. So they take care of all of that paperwork as part of their service. And State Superintendent Tom Torlakson is a reference for the company. And those of you who did go to the conference got to go to mm-hmm. the dessert and talk with him and hear some of the things that they have to do. I know it's a lot of money. I gave a lot of thought to bringing this to you, but I really feel right now we have to be very creative, and I was impressed with their record of bringing grants. One of the grants that we have on today's agenda, which is actually due in February, there's no way we could write that grant without the help of a company that could do that for us, and with their knowledge and expertise, I think it's worth taking a year and really evaluating their service to see if they can help us. I think we have to be creative.
Very good. Mr. Spence, is there anything in your background and dealing with this at the state level and over the years, and that would judge your opinions as to our going with this company?
Well, they are the largest. I mean, I know Ms. Tustamani was an assemblyman back in the, what year was it, 98, something like that? I had a question, though, about how much we currently spend. I mean, is it just our staff that writes the grants occasionally? There was a time when we would approve a consultant here or there to write a grant, contingent on whether or not they got it.
Yeah.
Yes, what?
Bill Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Bill Ben, yeah.
I think when we did the last grant, the math grant, California math and science grant, we worked closely with Cal College, the Institution of Higher Learning,
mm-hmm.
and they supported us in the grant writing. We didn't hire
them. Yeah, the Bill Ben, yeah, that's right. So what is staff going to do with all the time they have now that they're not writing?
Well, I think the reality is we're not writing the grants. We should be writing.
Well, I think there's a lot of that, yeah. I agree with that.
There just isn't time. Yeah.
They're going to do mental health.
Right, grants for mental health. I promise we'll keep busy.
Mm. Eileen?
The good thing about doing it this year as well is that as we start to develop our common core values, then we can give the direction to the organization to say, these are the areas in which we'd like to move our district, so we want to pursue the funding in these areas. So with that, if you can please tell Mr. Simulian his first order of business is getting us some money for strategic planning. Yeah. Because I do know that corporations and foundations...
Whatever's due next.
There are plenty of foundations that give money for strategic planning. So that'll be his first order of business. So we can pay for it.
Well, they'll also send somebody, too.
Sometimes.
Many of them do, because I've been through the process so many times. But if you get the grant, oftentimes they want you to select one of their trainers to come in and take you through the process. But their trainers are usually good and experienced. But they want to make sure that you're actually following through. You're
doing it right, yeah.
Right.
Which we want to do.
Right.
All right. Is there a motion for this item, please?
I'll move.
I'll second it.
Moved by Eileen Miranda Jimenez, seconded by Cami Polis, to approve the contract with California Consulting LLC for 1 year, December 14th, 11 to December 13th, 12. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. We'll go back then to item number 11 regarding the approval for grant applications for the ACES grant, 21st Century Grant, and the Community Development Block Grant as presented.
Well, I have a question on it. The block grant, I mean, can that include both of them? Does that include both in the county if she wanted to check the county out?
At this time, it did not include the county, but only in the city.
Can we?
I mean, I don't know. What's the deadline for it?
Yeah, I don't see why we couldn't modify it tonight.
If possible, I mean, you know.
Any community block grant that we're eligible for.
There you go. Yeah. That sounds good.
And the cities like to see that you've applied to anybody else who serves the same students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, we do have that portion of Olinda. And there's no reason why we shouldn't apply for money.
Sometimes during that grant process, they ask you if you've applied to the other people. Mm-hmm. So then it shows forward thinking that, yes, we've done that.
This doesn't exclude us from doing that at
it
all.
Says,
so.
So, but I think anything we're eligible, anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm fine with that wording. I'll move it with that wording if she hasn't, or a second first.
I'll second it.
I've got that. Thank you, Cami. I need more practice on saying Eileen Miranda Jimenez, too. So. I'm getting good at it.
You are.
I'm over. All right, so item 11, mm-hmm. It was moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez, to approve and apply the ACES grant, 21st Century Grant, and the Community Development Block Grants as presented. Are there any objections?
Should it be as amended, since we're saying any eligible?
Mm-hmm. I didn't. Where are we seeing the any eligible?
We're adding it here. It got added.
Okay. Well, I didn't see it. All right. As
as presented or as amended, I guess we'll say. Did you get that, Monica?
Monica knows what I want.
Okay. All right. All right. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 5-0.